This is the BBC, with the Daily Minutes podcast. Oh no, it isn't. I mean, this is the Daily Minutes podcast. This is, however, not the BBC.
Daily Minutes Podcast number 1656 with today's bulletin, 21 June 2019. This is our bulletin for Friday. Daily Minutes Podcast is a podcast in either English or Dutch or a mix of both on several topics with a strong focus on technical topics like amateur radio and shortwave listening. This podcast today will be in English. Jurgen ON3 Juliet Victor Bravo has made some recordings of the ISS overpass yesterday. Because the counterpart in the QSO, the school, is of course on the ground, you only hear one side of the QSO. The time the other side spoke is drastically shortened and most of the noise in the recording is removed. It sounded like this.
GB4 RPS, this is NA1SS on backup. How do you copy? Over. Yeah, Golf Bravo 4, Romeo Papa Sierra, this is November Alpha 1, Sierra Sierra on backup. I've got you loud and clear. How me? Over. Okay, I've got you loud and clear, so let's start with the questions. Good morning. Over. Yes, Sophia, the International Space Station is difficult because we built it. It's like building an airplane while it's flying, but it's modular, so we build it together with pieces that we put together. So we started out with just the functional cargo block and node 1, and then we slowly, over 10 years, added different modules to it to get to the configuration we're in today. It took a long time, 10 years, 100 launches, 100 spacewalks to make it happen. Over. It's one of the challenges is that water doesn't fall to the ground. When the ground gets wet, it doesn't want to go down to the roots. The water just wants to stay at the surface. New types of little pods technology to be able to pull the water down to the roots. Controlling the way water flows is a really tough problem. Over. Emily, thankfully, no, digestion doesn't change, but my organs inside do move. Because of that, my abdomen actually sit much higher in my torso now than they do when I'm on the ground. Over. You know, it's truly tough to pick how, because there are so many different things that we do up here, and they're in so many different areas. You know, for instance, yesterday I spent, over the last couple days actually, I've spent about 8 hours working with a team on the ground, and we were studying how water flows on orbit because we don't have any gravity, and capillary forces make water go in so many strange directions. It's almost like the water's alive. And the scientists wanted to use this to figure out how to better design a system to help clean carbon dioxide out of our air. It was really fascinating. Over. You know, if I start spinning a ball right now, I think it probably would hit the wall, drift slowly and hit the wall before it ever stopped. I can't tell that it's slowing down at all. We do have track, but there's almost nothing affecting it, so it just spins and spins and spins. Over. You know, in the future, absolutely, I think it will be possible for someone to spend their entire life in space. You know, that's a little ways down the road, and one of the reasons we're up here on the space station is that we're doing longer and longer missions to try to figure that out, because we really right now don't know the answer. To keep the blood in our head to fight against gravity. Gravity wants to pull all the blood to our feet, so our hearts are constantly fighting it. In space, it doesn't have to fight that force, and so it naturally pushes lots of blood into my head, so it almost feels like I'm standing on my head all the time on orbit. Over. Figure out what makes viruses or bacteria grow better or be more virulent, or could slow is NA1SS. I'll copy. Yeah, GV4RPS, this is NA1SS. Thank you for the contact. I'm sad that we didn't get through all the questions. I hope everyone has a great day. Enjoyed speaking with you. Signing off.
Well, I saw it on Anglia television, and I saw the romantic side of becoming a disc jockey, and because it was the in thing, everybody was interested in this sort of a local radio operation thing, you see, so I thought, well, I'll be part of it.
Once I got on the fort, the first person I met was John Waters, and John introduced me to George Short, and there was two other guys there, John Bolter and Terry Lambert, who were the transmission sort of maintenance men. They looked after all the generators and stuff like that. George had the idea that I was going to be the transmission engineer and where he got this idea from, but I sort of got him showing me how to turn this on and turn that on. And just after he had, he said, well, go into the studio, you can put a couple of records on. And the next thing I know is John Waters, Dave Simpson and myself are left on the fort and George Short is gone. I had a sort of basic knowledge of transmitters, very basic as well, and was left to get just sorted out from there. We managed to get out test transmissions, but gradually the quality went down and down, and I couldn't really work it out as to get the signal back any better.
Well, I expected to see something up to date, like just roughly an example, like a big freezer, refrigerator set up there, all a match system with a big aerial, and you know, being able to blast anywhere just about in this part of the world. But of course, what a letdown when we got there, huh? A little Jap engine run away there when it would run, when it wasn't out of fuel or out of spark or something.
Well, I didn't know. I mean, someone could have showed me a matchbox and said this will transmit 500 miles. I probably would have believed them. But at first, I thought, yeah, everything's all right. Of course, when we didn't get reception reports or dodgy signals, you know, were coming through, then I started to think different.
Radio Tower is the first local radio station in the country. These are low-powered engineering tests only. Regular programs will begin in the next few days. Radio Tower testing on 222. Radio Tower testing on 222 meters. Here is Radio Tower testing on 222 meters. Television transmissions, test transmissions will begin next week on Channel 5. This won't require the addition of any extra aerial to the viewer. Channel 4 aerials are usually aligned to the Channel 4 transmitter, which is swiftly placed in conjunction with our station. So at no cost at all, you should be able to view our program. Test patterns will be transmitted early next week. This is on Channel 5. Radio Tower is your first local radio station. Under the policy of this station, any inquiries whatsoever should be forwarded to Vision Projects. Vision Projects, Trinity Street, Colchester.
It was now December 1965, and the original transmitter engineer George Short had left the station. He had for some time been suffering from stomach trouble, and on one occasion had to call for assistance from the Walton lifeboat.
All right, Thames, Walton lifeboat, over.
This is Thames, Coast Guard, over.
Hello, Thames. We now have this casualty in sight. We can hear them calling for help. We're now approaching, over.
This is Thames, roger.
I was informed immediately, as I always was, and I went to Walton, taking with me one of the pressmen, Paddy Mullins at the time. And we went to Walton Pier to await the arrival of the lifeboat, who brought George off. Supposedly run out of tablets for a prostate gland. He never went back onto the tower again and eventually died with cancer.
Following the loss of George Short, a new transmitter engineer was found, Derek Massin, but this only added to the problems.
In the original state, the test transmissions were fantastic. It was only after the employment of really Derek Masson that the test transmission started to become worrying, really, that the problems with Derek Masson, I think he was afraid to become illegal. He was afraid that because he was involved in any way, shape or form with Radio Tower, it would outlaw him from anywhere else in the country whatsoever. He just had this funny thing about being an alien, I think, and he just couldn't do his job.
But now new backers were found. The late Tommy Shields of Radio Scotland had shown an interest in the company, but eventually it was Peter Jeeves that joined Eric Sullivan.
Eventually Peter Jeeves came along with the idea of becoming a director and going into offshore broadcasting. We met in Regent Street, and after a very short and sharp talk, he was in. We eventually clinched a deal in Hilton, and he became a co-director after George Short pulled out through illness. He became a co-director with myself. We each held 51, or between us held 51% of the shares of Vision Projects, Sullivan's Holdings, Jeeves Holdings, and one other company, Radio Hayward's Heath. Which were all solvent companies, all registered in Ireland, all registered in Dublin. And that's how the basis of the crowd got together.
This is Radio Tower and 236 Meters, your first local station. Here is the programme, line up for tomorrow. 7 till 9, Bill Rollins. 9 till 11, Chris Goslin. 11 to 2, I will be back. And 2 till 4, Dave Simpson with a good old country and western. 4 to 6, Graham London. 6 to 7, back again, John. And 7 to 8, Bill Rollins.
Throughout this time, staff on the tower continued their test transmissions. On land, ideas for programmes were being sorted out. Ideas for women's programmes, local sport and talent shows were on the cards. Unlike many of the other offshore stations, Tower was set up as a local radio station.
We wanted something a bit more personal to the area. Hence, we decided on television, which just didn't get off the ground. The early test transmissions could have been okay, but we were ordered. I went to a meeting in London at the head office in Mayfair, and we were, in no uncertain terms, ordered by Anthony Wedgwood Benn that should we do any transmissions of television, then we would be classed as aliens, foreigners, whatever, and we would be treated as such. In other words, we were hostiles in television. So we gave up the idea of television there and then, and I did put a notice in the newspapers at that time saying that we would now concentrate on local radio, and we wanted to be different. We didn't want to be a normal pop station. We just wanted to be something different in our own area, with prices that everybody could afford, the average shopkeeper could afford.
Now Tower was devoted to local radio, advertising was coming in, both local and national companies.
Going advertising, which was sold by Bob Record and Peter Jeeves, who were really top-class salesmen. Peter Jeeves, in as much as was with Condé Nast before he came to us, and also with Southern Television, selling Time. He did get the News of the World advertising, and also a Boulevard Watch and the Seventh-day Adventists, which paid a lot of money for advertising then. And we had really in the bag at that time somewhere in the region of about £180,000 worth of advertising revenue to use as soon as we were on the air.
Things seemed to be going well. Earlier troubles with tendering had finished. Tower now had its own tender, the Margie, a converted Icelandic trawler skippered by Casey Romas, former captain of the Weissmuller Company's Offshore One tender. One day, the Margie arrived at the fort with plenty of beer, whiskey and cigarettes. John Walters remembers this incident rather fondly.
I thought, my goodness, what a wonderful time we're going to have. And this is what it was, really, because we was not, you know, not getting a signal and or transmitting very well, apart from all these test transmissions. So I sat at the console with whiskey, beer, cigarettes surrounding me and had a whale of a time.
But the wonderful time described by John Waters was short-lived. The Margie was impounded by customs at Ipswich. The station was set up to go on air officially on Thursday, the 21st of April, 1966. But on the 11th of April, a very different transmission filtered through the noise.
He was expecting a supply boat. We was running short. We couldn't transmit. We couldn't do anything. And we was just stuck on the fort, you know, with absolutely nothing to do. The supply boat had been promised, and we had no idea what was wrong, you know, nothing at all. And because this is where the rot must have set in and everything had sort of gone kaput.
Well, I think it all comes back down to poor management. Even though I was supposed to have been one of the directors, I was sea-bound, if you like, or fort-bound. I couldn't get in and do some of the things I wanted to, and we were given to understand that this was being handled in London through Mr. Peter Jeeves and through the head man, Mr. Eric Sullivan, who was supposed to have this all under control. And whether in it was facts like weather that eventually beat us, or whether it was the threats of the government to close us down, whether it was the poor, how can we say, with the improvised way we had to operate with the equipment we had, we didn't really know to where our broadcasts were going to, whether they were getting across. It was we was a long time getting our reception reports back. I think we had an uphill grind all the way.
I was the youngest member of the crew and possibly didn't follow the politics of what was happening between the management, the staff, and, you know, how things were going quite as closely as the others. But I in my opinion, I think we could have made it and should have made it. The loss to the station, as far as I was concerned, was George Short. He had earlier proved that the transmissions could go out well, even using old equipment. And we had, at the beginning, good transmissions. But after Derek was employed, the signals died away and no improvement was made to them. And I think the date was coming up to be set for the 21st of April to go on the air, and we just couldn't make the date and lost revenue and eventually lost backers into the station, and that caused its collapse.
I think early mistakes were probably half the battle, in as much as spending too much time on television before turning to radio. Had we have gone into radio right from the beginning and used radio only, I think we would have probably been one of the forerunners. And we were in dire straits for money at this time, and to enable us to get people off the tower that were already out there, no money was changed hands, just our outside broadcast van was given to one of the fishermen, Billy Bennett, to go out and fetch the remainder of the men off the tower.
The official on-air date of the 21st of April passed, and it wasn't until Thursday the 28th of April, 1966, that the fishing boat owned by Billy Bennett arrived at the tower. Little time was left to pack belongings, but the return journey and the arrival at Harwich had a few surprises in store. Remember the whiskey and cigarettes?
Well, I thought might as well have a final fling coming back to Harwich. I had a couple of bottles of whiskey. I think I drank one on the way back and put cigarettes in my bag. On arriving at Harwich, customs were all waiting and crowds of people. They asked us to empty the bags. I refused, so they emptied my bag. Took out the... the whiskey had gone then. Yes, I was just left with cigarettes. Anyway, there was English-made cigarettes, which was all right, you know. Plus these foreign-made cigarettes. They said, well, you're not allowed to have these. You've been a naughty boy. Where did you get them? I said, well, I bought them at a shop out in the North Sea somewhere. So then they turned around and said, would you accompany us to the office, which I did. Consequently, I was fined £12 on the spot for smuggling. And I said, well, what becomes of the cigarettes? They said, well, these go to the Queen. I said, well, surely the Queen doesn't smoke this bloody rubbish.
Big tea, big tea, big tea, big tea. Stay tuned to Radio Tower.
Well, if I did it again, I'd do it my way. There's a song, I think, that goes like that. But I don't regret it, but I think it was a great education. And I'm not sorry. I mean, I've met some nice people. I think it was a very romantic thing, a very, I mean, romantic in the sense that it was enlightening. It was a, what you would say, like climbing the Everest, if you like. It was a challenge. I think put it back down to the word education, and I think I got educated.
I just think it was a great challenge and something I'll never regret. I'll always remember it as being part of my life that was a major experience.
The fort was back in the news in November 1966. Two squatters were rescued from the fort by Walton Lifeboat. The two men, Dexter Stoneham of London and C.T. Payne of Bexley in Kent, refused to say why they were on the fort, apart from stating that there was no connection with radio. However, David Hart, a film director, had told Coast Guards during September that he was placing two squatters on board. Almost another year passed, but on Friday the 18th of August 1967, 20 Royal Engineers boarded the fort. After several small explosions and 3 days' work, the final charge of 2,200 pounds of explosive was set. At 4:18, the biggest peacetime explosion marked the end of Sunkhead Fort. Today, all that remains are the stumps of the legs, which are still used as a navigational aid to shipping entering the Thames estuary. June 1964, and a group of businessmen set up a radio station on the Army Fort at Red Sands. They include Charles Evans, John Thompson, and Tom Pepper.
You are listening to a test transmission from Radio Invicta, broadcasting on 238 metres, 1259 kilocycles in the medium wave band. Reception reports, please, to the Chief Sound Engineer, Radio Invicta, Folkestone, Kent.
I was at home in Richmond. The doorbell went. My then wife answered it, and she came up and said, "It's a funny looking character downstairs for you." And in came this fellow in dungarees, cap, welly boots right up to his thighs, and the pong of, I don't know what it was. It wasn't body odour, it was just an odd type of smell. He hadn't shaved. He said,
"A UN Marino."
So I looked, I thought, "I'm going to get done in here." I said, "Yes."
"He said, well, I want you for my radio station."
He said he couldn't afford to pay me very much. In fact, it was only £25 a week, which even in 64 was good money. But he desperately needed somebody to come up to Radio Invicta. And that was it. That was my meeting with Tom Pepper.
Ed Marino recalling how he joined the station.
"When I got on now, I desperately wanted to use the toilet. So I said to Tom, you know, well, where are the toilets?"
He said, "Where the bloody hell do you think they are? Over the side, you see."
Things were very primitive at the start, but gradually they improved.
We did actually have a loo, and providing you were the bionic man, you could use it, because we used to have to use the loo and pick up this, 50-gallon churn of seawater to flush it. And then winch the churn down into the sea to get more water, you know. So, thank God, nobody on board had diarrhea.
"We apologise to amateur radio operators in the 80-metre band if they are having trouble with our third harmonic. Reports, please, to the Chief Sound Engineer, Radio Invicta, Folkestone, Kent."
Phil Perkins came into the forts because he complained. He was a ham. For some reason or another, the harmonic of Radio Invicta interfered with his reception or his transmission or one or the other, and he phoned Tom Pepper to complain. And Tom said, "Well, if you can do better, you come down and fix it," you see. So Phil thought, right, well, what I'll do is I'll come down and I'll sort of go out on the fort. It'll be nice to see what they're doing there. I'll sort out the equipment and go back home, back to my own job. He didn't reckon on Tom Pepper, because Tom got about there, and Phil took one look at the equipment, which was unbelievable. It was a 1-kilowatt transmitter. And he said, how the hell do you ever get this lock to work anyway? He set about rewiring the studio. He tuned up the transmitter. He built an amplifier stage, which increased the power. He organized the aerial, so instead of having a piece of wire strung between two poles, which unfortunately were not insulated, so that the whole of the forts were being used as an aerial, giving a tremendous distortion. Somebody had stuck a metal pole in the transmitter wire onto the metal pole, but the metal pole was connected to the metal fort. In fact, the largest aerial in the Guinness Book of Records is the English Channel under Radio Invicta.
The station reached as far as London, playing a mixture of pop and middle-of-the-road music. It soon began to build up an audience.
I devised a programme called Pop Luck, where we invited, this is for Simon, where we invited the listener to send in a postcard with a number on it, any number between 1 and, I remember, it was 9,300. And this was supposed to correspond with a number on one of the records in the studio. Now, the fact that we only had about 200 records in the studio made no difference, you see. Think big. To make things a little bit more tricky, we said that we would give a number out at the beginning of the programme and we would either add it or deduct it from the number the listener wrote on a piece of paper. Now, that was clever thinking, because I thought to myself, well, if we just take any record, we say, well, this is number 6,429, and somebody up in Norfolk thinks, oh, I like that record, I'll have to write in for it. Then we might be flummoxed when we get this card asking for 6,429 and finally we play something entirely different. So we had to devise this method of getting round it. And it worked. Because we played everything. I took out a few soundtrack albums like A Dentist's Drill and all that sort of thing, you know. And the programme worked. It was an absolute wow. And Sexy Simon did very well out of it. He was getting upwards of 150 letters a week, which is quite a lot for a small station, for this one programme. So it meant that everybody had their record played anyway, although when we went on the air we said that the post office's mail boat was just coming out sort of way down with sacks, as Tom brought the lot up in a margarine box, you know.
Back to Pop Luck now and all of your requests. Just a time check, though. It's about 1 minute to 12. We've got about 50 seconds left, and we'll be hitting 12 noon, high noon, on the Pop Luck show. Number 3,676. It's going out to Mr. Tony Jeffrey of 26 Coney Acre, Rickling, Saffron, Walden in Essex. Well, I got through that okay, didn't I? Here it is, 3,676.
But of course advertising was needed. Tom Pepper dealt with this in his own particular way.
He barged into the offices of the News of the World and said, oh, I want to see the chairman. Somehow or another, and I don't exactly know how, but he got in to see the chairman. And he said, I want your commercials on my station. This man was so taken back with Tom and so intrigued by this. He said, well, all right, I'll tell you what I'll do. We normally put everything through our advertising agents, but you show me that you can advertise the News of the World and come back and see me. So Tom came and saw me. And we worked it out, and for two Sundays, we did the News of the World adverts. Read it in the News of the World tomorrow. The News of the World had, they'd liked what they'd heard. They liked Tom's approach. They liked the unusualness of the situation. And they were prepared to give us a contract, not for very much, a couple of £1,000, you know. But for us, it would have meant a new lease. We need some equipment and several things.
Do you love me? And this is to remind you that you're tuned to your station on Styx, Radio Invicta, broadcasting on 306 meters medium wave. Now, don't you think that's good?
That was on lucky number 10, Carl Denver and Wimaway. If you would like something played on Potluck. Just send it out to Potluck, Radio Invicta, Folkestone, Kent. I think you'll probably be getting used to that address pretty soon. Ask for a rate card by dropping us a card to Radio Invicta Advertising Department, 110 Fenchurch Street, London EC3, or telephone Mansion House, 4622. That's Mansion House, 4622. Do it straight away. We'd like to hear from you. Back to Potluck. The time here is 5 minutes to noon. And remember, if you would like something on Potluck, send it along to Radio Invicta, Folkestone, Kent, and we'll try and get it out to you.
Unfortunately, things were not to go well for Radio Invicta. On the 16th of December 1964, Tom Pepper set out in his launch David to take supplies to the station. He left for the fort, taking DJs Simon Ashley and Martin Shaw with him. By this time, a storm was blowing up. Ed Marino, who should have been on the boat, remembers the events after this.
In the evening, about 6 o'clock in the evening, I think it was, we had a visitor, and it was a police launch. And they came up, hadn't checked everybody, and we thought, well, you know, what's going on? We didn't know. They asked for me, and of course I was there, and I thought, oh, God, you know, what have I done? Parking tickets or something like that. And then they said, we thought that you were dead. Because I hadn't been on the air that day, because I was not supposed to be there, you know. And they said, well, why should I be dead? And then they told me that they'd found Tom's body, and they knew from Tom's wife that I was with him. But having listened to the station all day, not hearing me on the air, and only hearing those that should have been there anyway, they thought I'd gone down. The police said, well, we're going to take you off now because we need you to identify and, you know, help us and all that sort of thing. And I said, well, I'm not going off, not until I've done this commercial. And they said, well, you know, we can't, we've got to get you off now because the tides and all that sort of thing. And I said, well, I'm not going until we've sort of, until I did this tribute, you see. And the two boys hadn't been found, and there was still a remote chance that they might still be alive. And so I refused to leave until I'd been able to say something to be broadcast the following day. We'd closed down at 6 o'clock that evening anyway, you see. So they said, well, we haven't got time to let you sort of do other stuff. I grabbed a piece of music and spoke out of the top of my head. And literally, as I finished speaking, the police sort of grabbed me and took me into the launch and whipped me back to Whitstable. And that was it. They never found the other two boys, but they did find a body in Spain. In the pocket was a tape of some Radio Invicta programs. And it could have been Simon, it could have been Martin, we don't know. But it was a terrible end to a very happy, friendly station.
Time is just past 10 o'clock on Radio Invicta. The programme schedule of Radio Invicta has been temporarily suspended. Here with a tribute to Tom Pepper is Ed Marino.
Today, we on Radio Invicta are deeply grieved. The loss of our chairman, and not only our chairman, but our very dear friend, Mr. Tom Pepper, in itself, hard enough to take. We on Radio Invicta resolve that this will be something for his family and children to grow up as a living memorial to a great and wonderful man who risked his life many times for other people, as a lifeboatman bringing us food and supplies in gales where no normal man would ever dream putting out to sea. Lord, for those who peril on the sea, take them to your hearts. We beseech thee.
The station continued for a few months until February 1965. Then a new sound was heard from Red Sands.
A new big sound of music and news over London. This is the KING test transmission. The prelude to a new big sound of music and news over London. This is KING and a test transmission.
This was in March. The day started at 7 with continuous music. Then came Mike and Mandy Raven's breakfast show. During the morning, there were country and western, Latin American and folk music shows.
You're tuned to KING, transmitting on 236 metres on the medium wave, and the time are 30, just coming up to 33 minutes past 1 p.m. You're listening to Lunchbox, introduced by myself, Roger Gomez. And now it's time for myself, Roger Gomez, to tell you about the KING Lucky Carl Sticker Number and such like competition. The idea of this competition is that on the back of all our car stickers, they've got a different number printed, and you might be the lucky one who wins. You see, each week we have a draw, and if you've got a car sticker with the number which is drawn upon the back, then you're lucky and you get a small prize. I'm not going to tell you how small, but it's pretty small anyway. If you want a car sticker because you want to enter for this glorious competition, or also simply because you want to display it upon your car, upon the back of your head, or anywhere you wish to advertise this glorious station, then all you have to do is send a postcard or a letter to this address. Car Stickers King Radio, Oxford House, Folkestone, Kent. Car Stickers King Radio, Oxford House, Folkestone, Kent. And upon this postcard or letter, demand as many car stickers as you feel you have the gall to demand, and they'll send them to you because they're good like that.
Continuing through the afternoon with Memory Lane, Lucky Numbers, which was identical to the Invicta Potluck Show, new releases and Mike Raven's R&B show until closed down at 7 in the evening. But KING was not a great success. Ted Albury was called in to help.
I'm Peter John in English Media. Title music is by Croatian artist Blasco and is published under Creative Commons. You can find this podcast on dmpodcast.net, DM is for Daily Minutes, and on several other platforms. De internetfaciliteiten en studio hardware voor Daily Minutes worden gesponsord door 70MHzShop.nl, 70MHzShop.nl.
Daily Minutes Podcast. Whoever hears this is crazy.
En microfoon naar retour.
Today's Slow Scan Radio will be on both 6070 and 7440 kHz. Today's broadcast can also be heard at 7440 kHz. Reports are welcome. This is Slow Scan Radio. Good evening, this is Peter John. We bring you experiments with Slow Scan TV images, mostly photos, and also several kinds of data transmission using FLDigi. We have a show sending some data, mostly SSTV images. The images can be received with your normal radio. The easiest way is to use a smartphone, holding it simply close to the receiver speaker. You will need an app like Robot 36 for Android or CQ SSTV for iOS then. There are also good programs for PC. More info about that you can find on our website, www.slowscanradio.com. www.slowscanradio.com. For the data, preferably use FLDigi, although other programs most probably will work as well.
Thank you. Thank you.
Slow Scan Radio is copyright 2018, excluding rights of featured items and any music. Website is www.slowscanradio.com. Mail address is xray@xraydeltavictor.mikeecho.com.